Welcome to the Nerdentials Podcast, starring your hosts, Joe Tweedy, Matthew Johnson, Nick Thomas, and Lynn Dudgeon.
Yeah.
It's like we've been doing this for a year.
And it's recording.
Like we've almost, yeah, on the edge of our seats practically.
But
a
you
year.
Said you were going to count to five. I just counted down from five.
You know what?
So you're throwing me off there.
That's okay. You figured it out. The digits were smart, boy. But you're going to college.
But he said on record. He didn't say on a number.
That's true. So
there's going to be five numbers, and then I'm going to say record. All right? 6, then 11, right. 2, 8.
You are so messy with my CDO right now.
Yeah, I can tell that you have really hardcore CDO, OCD.
Oh, no. He's twitching.
I'm figuring it out. It's okay. So if I put three nickels in front of you, and it went head, and then I just put it and centered it, and it wasn't on heads or tails, and it was just on its rim, would that bother you?
No, it's an easy fix. I'd slap you.
And hopefully after I slapped you, the momentum of the slap would knock it to heads, and then I'd be okay.
That was good.
I can't help my OCD.
CDO?
In the proper order, yes.
Okay.
Oh, you know how I know it's going to be a good night, guys? When my jaw hurts from laughing.
And we're already making fun of Nick.
We are two steps into a five-step process for grand success.
Hilarity.
And what are those three additional steps?
Repeat step one.
All right. Yeah, pretty much.
I feel like Matt's scared of me now. You should never hear when I'm here.
This is an unfortunate set of circumstances.
I miss you, Matt.
There is a correlation I'm seeing, though. Every time he is here, she is the
same person. We are the same person, actually.
They call that cause and effect.
I don't get it.
Well,
alcohol.
You were here, and therefore an effect was made. I don't know.
You know how there's like the Mandela effect? Is this the Matt Johnson effect?
Mandela effect versus Matt Johnson effect. I'm trying to think if that works.
No, it doesn't. Mandela effect is completely different.
I wasn't saying if they were similar. I was saying, you know how there is that. Is there this effect?
We're just in, is it a Mandela effect? So we're basically the same person. Because we're two different alternating timelines. And Jeff and Matt are the same person. So it's like, actually, it's been Jeff the whole time. Or it's been Matt the whole time. And you just think that Jeff exists.
Oh my gosh. There it is.
But what if neither exists?
I'm just a part of Joe's imagination.
What is that?
Joe's really good.
That is very, very visually shared with us.
It's like Fight Club.
There is no cat in the box.
Whoa! Did you just bring up Fight Club?
Yeah, it's just like Fight Club.
There is no box.
Me and Joe are the same person. What's in the box?
That leaves me very bewildered, Mr. Barry.
What's in the box?
Schrodinger.
Now we're on a completely different movie.
Okay, we've shifted way too far.
We're going everywhere.
We're all over the place.
Brad
and
Pitt, though.
We're all over the place and not all over the place. All at the same time. Thought-provoking moments from Joe Tweedy.
Or are we?
As Jeff sips on his beverages for the night, evening, or morning, depending on where you're listening to this. You know what, guys? I think it's time. I think we need to rally together and start something. And you know what that something is? Dead silence. That's right, guys. Dead silence. Thank you. We have brought this show to a close.
See you later, guys. Thank you for showing up.
thank you for this 5-minute podcast. Not even. I don't know.
Yeah, we're barely in there.
We brought this together. You're right on the money right there.
All right, well, anyway, you know what? That being said, guys, welcome to Nerdentials, that nerdy essential show that talks about TV, movies, comic books, and video games, and always in different orders. But, you know, as of late, we have gone more topical. So if you're just joining us, we are taking shifts to improve your listening experience by diving deeper into things that maybe interest you. We don't know because nobody emails us. It's a very fraternizing... that's the wrong word.
No.
No, it's a very...
It would be fraternizing if somebody actually emailed us.
It would be.
It's the opposite of it.
Yeah, so... well, anyway, that being said, guys, I haven't even introduced the cast, but we would love to hear from you. I know there's listeners out there. I see the numbers. So if you want to hit us up, go ahead and shoot old school email, nerdentials@gmail.com.
It's a world .com. When email is now old school.
It's sad to say that because I keep advertising Twitter, but no one uses that. That's starting to die. I don't know what we're going to do, guys. So... that being said, let's just move forward anyway, because we all...
Tumblr.
We... well...
Tumblr. Let's make a Tinder profile and just for Nerdentials and swipe right on every geek.
Let's see what happens.
Swipe right on every geek and be like, hey, if you like us, listen to our podcast.
Wait. I'm not going to go on every nerd. Nerd.
All right, well...
Nerd on them.
We do have a theme for tonight, guys. We are on the cusp of the fall season. We're right around the corner to the month of October. So let's kick off that season with some spooky themes. But before we dive into that, let's introduce the cast for tonight. I am your host, Joe Tweeden, and across the way is Brother Nick Thomas. How's it going, sir?
Fantastic. The world did not end today, so that's a good start.
Always a good start, especially when the apocalypse is around the corner.
Apocalypse is nigh.
And to my left, who speaks his words and minds fluently, is a Mr. Jeff Barry.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I am here to do a podcast with groups of people.
And he makes waves at that, indeed.
And he's also more topical than butt paste ointment.
Mm-hmm. Thank God for that.
Or the news.
And last but certainly
shameless
not...
product placement.
Preparation G for...
those that
I'll
need
stay
it.
On your hemorrhoids better than and, the H.
And teaming with great advice and commentary is Mr. Lynn Dungeon. How's it going, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Man, a few just words when he needs short. To be.
Just keep it short.
I think we dumbfounded him from the previous comments.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming.
And we'll be swimming out of that topic into our main topic. And guys, we're going to kick things... What? Go ahead, Nick.
I'm saying for more ointment, back to you, Jeff.
Oh, why did I pass it off to you for that statement? Good Lord. That being said, now that we've...
I'm out.
For you listeners out there, the visual cue is Mr. Barry is applying ointment to something.
It was a butthole.
Thanks for the clarification.
You're welcome.
Always appreciate it.
I don't think people could put two with number two together.
Yeah.
No.
But it was only one finger on a number two hole.
All right, keeping it as keeping it explicit as always, guys. Let's we got a couple topics. We're gonna review a couple spooky movies that recently came out, and dive into some spooky television shows. That being said, let's jump into. I'm screwing up my words.
Tit talk.
Movie matters. Here we go.
Movies matter. Psh-
All right, guys, this is the Movie Matters for tonight, today, or the morning, whenever you're listening. We have a couple recent films that have come out that have been good, great, and some would say downright decent. We're going to...
That was a downright decent film.
It was explicitly decent. So, guys, on the list for today, we've got Stephen King's It, the remake, and Annabelle Creation, the prequel to the prequel. I know. Prequelception, if you will. But first, the 1990s release of the made-for-TV miniseries of It by Stephen King has since gotten a remake for 2017. And two of the nerds at the table tonight, a Mr. Barry and a Mr. Tweeden, have seen said video. Sorry, film.
It's good. It's good.
I've seen the old one.
That bad. This one good.
Original was great. Ooh,
okay, we're going to have a good conversation because of what Mr. Barry just said.
Okay, so...
I'll let you open with... How about we do this? General thoughts. We'll stay slightly...
Yes.
Spoilerish free. But...
What I'm going to say is that this, there was a good thing. I'm not afraid. You're in Roseburg. That's not going to reach here.
Put the knife down, Nick. Anyway.
We'll overnight it to you.
He gets it. I get it. And he's just like, he puts a note on there. Kindly stab yourself.
Oh, that is creepy. Does that bring back memories? Sorry.
Oh, man. He actually did it. I gotta stab myself. Ow.
Now on to the movie review.
Yes, let's actually start this up. Movie was great. My impressions is going into it, I didn't watch the miniseries, so I was just trying to get a rise out of you, Nick, because I like to. Let's get you worked up. I never watched the miniseries, and I didn't read the book.
Fresh eyes on this film.
Yes, very fresh eyes. And by watching this, I loved it. I absolutely loved this film. Bill Skarsgård plays an amazing Pennywise. He is creepy. How a lot of people that... see clowns and have a phobia for them, I feel that's basically just how he what he was embodying there was how a person with the clown phobia sees a clown, and it was perfect.
I can see that. That makes a lot of sense. So that's your overall feelings on the movie?
Yes, the kids were great. The acting was just stellar. The cinematography was stellar. It was gory to make a point and not to be just over the top. And that's good. There's a lot of blood in it, but it was blood in a tasteful way.
Right, this was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, this wasn't a saw fest.
Now, that's me saying, at a point, blood just comes pouring out of a faucet. Out of the sink of a out of a sink's drain, and just keeps pouring out of it,
painting a whole room.
Yeah, painting a whole bathroom, and it's well done.
And that was a both an excellent recreation of the scene in the book, and even recreating the original scene from the 1990 miniseries made for TV iteration. So, my general thoughts on the film as a whole, I will say I echo a lot of the same thoughts. I thought it was shot incredibly well. The pacing, the soundtrack, the score for this film was excellent. And it was really kind of initially threw me off at the intro. I thought it was slightly modern. And the reason that threw me off is because this film... is set in a different setting from the original series. Ironically, the 1990s film was set back in the 60s, I believe.
50s, 60s, yeah.
Yeah, and this modern take on it was set in 80, full-blown 80s nostalgia. And we'll dive in deeper into the plot points of why that is. So it threw me off initially, but just like as it laid out, I was like, okay, this is actually, it's continuing to go really well. The performances were excellent. The kid actors were fantastic. And as far as the Pennywise goes, I would say this interpretation did an excellent job all around. I do have a couple critiques on it, and we'll dive into that later on. But overall, this film was, I feel, the appropriate amount of care was put into this, knowing its source material, I feel, overall. So for me and Jeff, I think we both appreciated it. Jeff had never seen any previous source material. I have never read the book, but I have watched the original made-for-TV miniseries. And at some point, guys, Matthew Johnson will come on here and give us his thoughts. We promised we're going to tie you to a chair, mister.
Eyes glued open.
Eyes glued open for this. But you okay?
Fuck.
Oh, yeah, did you bite that bottle?
No, I sure rammed it right into my tooth because I'm smart.
I'm sorry. There's been a big thing in the past. You can kind of judge someone's personality by what they most know Tim Curry from.
Would you like to elaborate, Nick? Are you scrutinizing me for some reason?
No. The Tim Curry old it.
Yeah.
So let's do this. What do you know Tim Curry the most from?
Me? Clue.
Yeah.
That's
of course you would.
Closely followed
this is,
by
this
Rocky.
That's all I'm going to say.
Horror picture show.
Lynn, how do you know Tim Curry?
McHale's Navy.
Really? That's an. I just to be fair.
You look like a McHale's Navy sort of type. I see it all over you. Joe?
Yeah?
How do you know Tim Curry?
Well, to be honest, it's a combination of places.
No, really. First one. First one that comes to mind.
First one that comes to mind.
Home Alone. Home Alone 2.
Yes, of course.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see it. I see it in your,
Jeff,
I see it in your
Jeff,
goatee.
Where do you know
him? Nigel Thornberry.
Oh, wow. Huh. Is that your first exposure?
No. That's just the most memorable to me.
And oh, you were asking for memorable. Okay.
And if I had to actually go, the first one that actually pops in my head was actually a voice. I didn't go with that, though.
Hexic. It was actually Forte.
The first
like
episode of Batman the Animated Series. He was the original voice for the Joker. And they changed him right after that.
Whenever I think Tim Curry, that's how I think of him. It's just Nigel Thornberry. Whoa!
But I hope he lives up to Tim Curry's Pennywise. I haven't seen the new one yet, but I have a lot of fond memories of the old one.
What I'm going to tell you, he is not Tim Curry's Pennywise. He is Bill Skarsgård's Pennywise. And I think it doesn't have the camp. It doesn't have the camp that Tim Curry is known for, and that is good.
All right. There's going to be some of our listeners like me. Who is Bill Skarsgård and what has he played in?
Bill Skarsgård is he's the little Skarsgård. He is related to the guy who played Eric in True Blood, and he's also in Hemlock Grove. Is his most memorable? He played the vampire in Hemlock Grove.
Okay. Netflix original series, yeah, three seasons running.
Yeah.
Good show.
I mean, that's Jeff's experience, and it's easy to camp, to label Tim Curry in the field of camp. But, so here's the thing. We'll break this down a little bit as far as just some of the differences between the original 90s and the modern take. And unfortunately, Matt's not here tonight to voice his perspectives on those because he has a little more knowledge in the books. I will say from research, I know that, and from my wife having read the book as well, and rewatches the original It every year because that's just the thing she does, can say that from what I know that the modern take of the film as a whole is more close to the books. They didn't go as extreme because Stephen King can get a little creepy and weird, and we'll just throw that out there. Child orgy. Yeah, and if you're confused about that, seriously, guys, go read the book. I guess there's a tactful way in which he approaches that. A lot of people on the internet were gravely concerned about that being in the film. Nothing that absurd was in the film, but as far as some of the key moments with Pennywise, they follow a lot closer to the book. There's more, a couple more shocking moments that are in the book that are not in Tim Curry's version. But I am a huge Tim Curry fan when it comes to some of his classic roles that he's done. And as far as It and Pennywise are concerned, the comparison I want to make is that I agree full-heartedly with Jeff Barry's opinion on Bill Skarsgård as taking the dark, psychotic angle, and as far as his performance being excellent and on point for the version and take he was going for, I agree. Absolutely excellent. A lot of old-school Tim Curry fans, you got two groups of people for the Tim Curry fans. You've got the people that enjoy the camp and the people that just truly appreciate Tim Curry for the type of theatrical performances he produces.
For his characters, more than anything.
Yes, yeah,
because
right.
You can be like, you can see him in Legend and you don't even know that that's Tim Curry until you hear, oh, Tim Curry played the Darkness in Legend.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For this role specifically, though, because here's the thing, like, even though Jeff Barry calls labels a bit of camp for the original, and I agree with that for both its cinematography and its era in which it was released and the general feel for it, I can see and agree with those elements of calling it a little campy. To me, though, some of his performances with the child actors as Pennywise, Tim Curry's role was creepier to me in some respects. Because his tormenting of the children was more from, there was a lot more jolliness to his clown performance that really played a more creepy feel. It's different. I'm not criticizing Bill Skarsgård.
Okay, I think this is a good way to put it. He was happy to feed in the miniseries is he was happy to be like just torturing these people and getting his food, while Bill Skarsgård's kind of came out more like, I didn't feed as much as I need to, or I need to get more. This isn't working. I need more.
His was
and
a little,
that's how it, yeah. That's how it kind of plays out more.
So you feel he was like more ravenous in his.
Yes, he wanted it, and he didn't like when he couldn't get what he wanted.
Okay.
And that was more the kind of the thing, because he feels more alien. He feels more like a creature, Bill Skarsgård does, than Tim Curry. Tim Curry just feels like he completely, creature completely just embodied the clown, and he is going to be mostly clown that is eating things. Lynn, you had something?
So, like, when he doesn't feed, he feels kind of manic.
Is a great way to actually put it. Bill Skarsgård is definitely more manic than Tim Curry's.
Well,
and I guess you kind of have to think about how psychology has kind of evolved over the time, our lifetime from 1990 to 2017. That's almost 30 years worth of psychological research going into it. And so our way of seeing that kind of like psychosis or whatever, and how it affects people and how it could be done is different than somebody back in 1990 looking at it and reading it off of that way. It's just a way of the times. Does that make sense? Am I making sense, or am I just
I think that's a fair observation and analysis.
Shooting now shit out my mouth.
Well, your shit was very analyzed.
That's why I kind of want to say that you got to think of the horror genre or the genre of it back when Tim Curry was Pennywise, and then the genre now, how it's evolved over the
exactly.
They're trying to be more.
And see, this is
with the time.
And this is the thing about the horror genre for me, at least, is that I don't find older stuff scary at all. Like, I remember watching The Omen and stuff like that, and it doesn't affect me. I go and I watch that now, and I watch somebody's body get cleaved in half by an elevator cable, and I'm just like, that looks gross. That's dumb. And it takes me out of it. Same with The Shining.
It's that one word, that desensitization.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly. Well, if you've noticed with horror nowadays, it has definitely gone more psychological than being like a complete like gore fest. It's more like, oh, this situation freaks me out instead of, oh, this creature freaks me out. So if a creature can make the situation scary for you, that's what's going to scare you. And that's how horror has kind of gone in our present scape of the horror genre. Like, you see stuff like It Follows and, Ouija and things like that. It's more the dialogue and what people are saying. Babadook is the same way. It's more a tension-filled experience than just being, oh, this creature's going to jump out at you and then cut your throat and you're going to just poop your pants.
Well, one of the things that the original It did, speaking of the kids when you were talking about earlier, is a lot of those kid actors, that miniseries launched their careers. People like Jonathan Brandis, Seth Green. He played young Richie.
Oh, yeah.
This was their big point. Are we going to see some of that from the new kids that came in from this?
For sure. For sure. I mean, you already see it with the kid from Stranger Things.
Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah.
He's the lead actor from Stranger Things.
Is he the new Richie?
Yes, he is the new Richie.
Yeah. Yeah. That kid's already locked in two huge IPs, both in film and television now. He's guaranteed to be on for a couple more seasons with the Netflix original series. Don't know where he's going to go from there. Funny side story to that is actually while he went back on set for Stranger Things Season 2, something he didn't do a lot before, and the producers of Stranger Things were a little taken back, was when he'd mess up lines, he would drop the F-bomb every single time. Because if you guys watch the new It, this is a side note I wanted to bring up about the kid actors. This kid who plays Richie, he's kind of the jokester in the group. And he's kind of lewd with his dialogue, and he does drop a lot of F-bombs in the film.
A lot of your mom jokes and stuff like
makes sense.
That.
It was originally played by Seth Green, so.
Yeah, he does a lot of dick measuring jokes and mom jokes. And but here's the thing, is that although there's quite a few F-bombs in the film, he says them in very circumstantial situations that are, like, perfect for his age. Like, when something scares the absolute crap out of him, it's only natural that a kid his age would drop an F-bomb, and it's perfect throughout the film. So the irony is, while he's filming Stranger Things, he was a little more mild-mannered in Stranger Things, and he didn't cuss, and he doesn't probably cuss in the show in Season 2, but during outtakes and cuts, he was dropping F-bombs because he had to say so many times in the movie. You know?
I bet his parents absolutely love it.
I'm sure. I think
they love the paycheck.
That too. The most memorable thing.
You're going to college.
The most memorable thing I think for it, the current iteration of this, is its 80s nostalgia. I think it hits a lot of our generation because of that, just like Stranger Things did. And I think that's why this film and that series are going to be extremely popular for a while with those kid actors.
So this is a theory. Sorry,
go ahead.
Do you have something?
I was going to say, because if you look at the original one, the miniseries, the first part of the miniseries was all them as kids. Second part of the miniseries was all them as adults. Did they pull that into the new movie, or was it all kids?
There's going to be a part two.
Oh.
So they did, part one was everything that happened back in 88. And, well, 88 is where it starts, and it's when Georgie gets taken.
27 years ago.
And then 89 is when Pennywise is going on his rampage.
And so the end scene of this movie, like they do the kids make a pact. We're always going to be there for each other. They hold hands.
A blood pact.
And because in the original film, they did this very corny, cheesy. What was his name? The kid with the inhaler.
I can't remember.
They passed around the inhaler as like their way of making an. As a way of making the oath.
Bill was the one with the inhaler? No, I don't think so. Bill was the brother.
No, Bill was the stuttering kid. Oh. Eddie was the guy that the mom always had him take pills, placebo effect. He thought he always needed his inhaler.
These are gazebos.
That's a quote from the movie. But the original 90s film had them make an oath. We're like, hey, give me that. They passed around the inhaler. It was very cheesy. In this one, just like the book, they actually make a cut on each of their hands and they hold each other's hands and make a literal blood oath that will always be together. And if that clown ever shows up again, they said, we will meet up together and face him again together. And literally the ending scene says, chapter one, the end. And it says chapter one. Like that's how the movie ends, literally.
Mm-hmm. So you know that there's at least going to be a part two, and
the original writer has already been brought on for the sequel, and so they're working hard at getting that written up now. So that is going to be on its way, and a lot of people are like, who would they cast as, you know, to, and also they're trying to do this quickly. They're fast tracking this film because they want the childhood actors to get them back on for flashback scenes as quickly as possible for production purposes.
Yeah, to keep them as close to...
look the same age as they did. Yeah.
Because right now, I mean, they're in prepubescent. Like, they're about to pop off. And that's something that I really liked is because you can tell, like, they're all around the same age. Everybody's the same age. I think Beverly, who is the girl, is like a year older than them. And you can really see the difference between their middle school kids to a more like somebody that's starting to go through puberty, and just how little they look. And by the point that they hit puberty, they'll sprout up. Because I don't know if you guys remember, girls were always taller than us until we hit puberty and then shot up past them.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing that I wanted to say is it kind of proves something that I've been thinking for a very long time, that period pieces in the horror genre tend to do a lot better than ones that are taking place during modern times.
I think there's been a trend of that, at least.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the Ouija origin story, any of the Conjuring movies.
Yeah, which is a great segue. Did you guys have any other questions about this film?
When they go to the second part, to the adults, do you think it would be a wise decision for them to pick people that people already know, or do you think they should try to go with no names that people don't know?
I think that they should pick people that look like the kids. I think that's really all it needs to be. And they need to be good actors because they need to be able to pull off it feeling genuine.
Well, 27 like years the kids later, did. They're looking at 40-year-old people.
Exactly. Yeah. So that means like Jessica Chastain, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, people like that, that should be able to play it.
Yeah, and the thing with that is, you know, I think the key factor is like what Jeff said is The likeness and age range, obviously, and their chemistry, I think, is a huge, huge aspect, because I think that's what they're going to kind of feed off of in Hollywood, is trying to get those flashback scenes in there to continue with the chemistry, because what made this first take at it so good was the kids and their chemistry with each other, and the fact that you believed they were genuine friends. They were this generation's Breakfast Club on the run from a clown, basically, you know?
It was Goonies, but with more horror.
Exactly. That's a greater, take on it.
Stand By Me, but with a lot more dead bodies. Yeah. And a girl.
Well, guys, I think that you want to put a number on it for your score, Jeff?
I'm gonna put it up there at probably at least an 8.5 for me.
So does this match up to your predictions for it?
Me? Oh yeah. Like, looking at the trailers and everything, a lot can say can be said for a horror film just by the trailer itself. You can tell kind of more if it's taking the good parts from a movie, or if it's going to be something, just the cinematics of this, just how everything was framed in this movie.
Now, the big question.
Great.
The big question. Do you think Matt has a reason to be as scared for this movie as he said he did?
So, I went and saw this with my wife. The reason why she is scared of clowns is because of the It miniseries that she saw when she was 4 years old, and then went to a circus afterwards and was pulled down into the ring by a clown to take part of an event, and she freaked out, cried, and kicked the clown and left the ring, and then they left the circus. So she didn't get to ride any elephants, which was the reason why they were there. She sat through this. She was absolutely terrified the whole time. She was basically in a ball holding onto my arm for the full 2 hours of this movie. But after we got out, she said, "This was great. This was a great movie. I absolutely fuck this movie, but I love it." So if she can do this, Matt can do this, and he will appreciate it.
Call to arms, Matthew. You've been called out. Like I mentioned earlier in the cast, a prequel to a prequel. It's like a pre-sequel. It's like that one game that did a thing. It was an Inception-like title. I know.
Prequelception?
Kind of. But anyway, guys, Annabelle Creation is actually an origin story to a story called Annabelle, which ironically is an origin story to a pair of films called The Conjuring. Now, directed by David F. Sandberg, he's done another film called Lights Out, which was freaky as hell. And if you want my thoughts on it, I'll give that on another podcast. But
yeah, better. Yeah, I could go on that. It's better on paper than it is in actual.
Anyway.
Oh, sorry.
Quickie review. Thank you for that, Jeff.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is an origin of a doll that's basically haunted multiple families over the course of, 100 years or more. Well, not 100 years. Sorry. Several decades. It'd be more accurate. So the premise for this film is that 12 years after the tragic death of their little girl, a doll maker and his wife welcome a nun and several girls from a shuttered orphanage into their home, when they soon become the target of the doll maker's possessed creation, Annabelle. Now, the way that worked out was he was a doll maker, like in the description there. They lost their child to an unfortunate car accident. Child walked into the street. Spoiler warning, it's in the first 5 minutes of the film. Hits by the car and dies. Over the course of the next few months, the mother and father start praying and just in their grieving process, they get to a point where they ask for, they don't care how it needs to happen. They just want to see their little girl again. And of course, like in all supernatural horrors, they prayed so hard, they ended up talking to the devil and said instead somehow, you know, just saying, we'll do anything to get in contact with our daughter. And instead, with most supernatural thrillers that have hauntings that go really dark like this one, they didn't get to talk to the spirit of their daughter. Instead, it ended up being a demon that was disguising itself as their daughter, to a point where it took over, and basically a lot of folklore and theology and ideas of possession sometimes use dolls as conduits, I guess. It's kind of a silly notion, but it's also kind of a long-running historical fact that certain people through, I guess cults would be the best way to use this description, would utilize a dolls as a conduit to the other side. And a lot of times the other side ends up being very demonic and dark. And so that all,
it's a human shaped empty vessel.
Exactly. So overall thoughts for this film though, as far as like the way they did it, the original Annabelle was decent. But it, to me, it was, I said decent, but I'm not, like, I wasn't blown away.
I'm agreeing with you.
It was hit and miss throughout the film, and critically, it did quite horrible, actually, scoring around the 30% mark or lower.
It wasn't The Conjuring.
No. However, Annabelle Creation scored in the upper 60 percentile, doubling its original critic review.
Which is honestly pretty surprising for any horror film
that mark. Yeah, when you hit 60% and above in horror, it's actually promising when you see that, especially if you haven't seen it or don't know what to expect. This did in the upper 60 percentile. It did really well overall, and my take from it, the thing I got out of this versus the It film, I enjoyed the movie It for its nostalgia. And it did have a few jump scares and some good creep factors, but the difference for me in this film is this film, unfortunately, I would say, and maybe it's not a slight on the fact that it lacks any lighter moments, but this Annabelle Creation kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat, not in a thriller aspect, but just there's constant dread throughout, with very sparse moments of lightheartedness with the girls, the orphans that are there with the nun at the house. And then the pacing just picks up as the film progresses. It just gets scarier and darker. With this constant progression, it is well done. There's a lot of moments of genuine terror that really, the actors are decent. They really have me feeling for them. This actress, little girl Lulu Wilson, plays a leading role as being pretty much the best friend to this crippled child who's
handicapable.
Yeah, basically she's got polio and has to have a leg cast and basically be wheeled around for most of her time there. So right on the onset of the film, when you see that, you're like, and you know it's a horror film, you're like, oh man, she's crippled. You know there's going to be tension there. There's going to be those moments where she's trying to get away and she can't because she's crippled. And you're like, oh great. Handicapable. Is that really offensive?
No, crippled? I'm just being.
Or are you just being snarky? Yeah. I'm just being sure because I'm like, do I need to correct my PC commentary? Anyway. So,
well, I guess, was she capable enough to get away?
Well,
handily.
Unfortunately, yeah. The hand is capable, best friend.
Why aren't you calling her crippled? So
you made him self-conscious.
Yeah, you made him self-conscious. There.
That's why.
He's become aware.
So the characters woke. the characters Linda and Janice are best of friends. And I bring up Linda, who played by Lulu Wilson, was also in Ouija Origins of Evil. I think this girl's going to make a huge mark because that was a prequel sequel basically too. And it did better than the original Ouija movie. But anyway, moving forward. So there's a lot of moments built in right at the beginning of this film that you like, you know, you're going to feel apprehensive about. It's a two-story large home that they move into. And of course there is this handicap elevator, crippled elevator chair that she could sit in to get her to the bedrooms.
Cause such a dick.
You're fine. You're fine.
So cruel.
Cause all the bedrooms are upstairs. And of course the
how slow moving is it? Every time I see those elevators, I think it just, those things are really slow.
They are. And that's where like the most tension is built towards, I want to say the beginning of the third act for this film, where the darkness is making its presence known, the evil that possessed that doll. Because this movie does a good job of, okay, that crippled who makes her way and discovers there's a locked room, right? It's the dead daughter's room to this wonderful family's home. And she gets all curious and the audience is all like, why the hell are you? No, why are you going there? In those moments. Yeah. She just explores the bedroom. There's a cute little dollhouse in there. There's a closet that requires a key. You know, these little moments like, no, don't look in there. Don't go there. What are you doing?
If it's locked, it's locked for a reason.
It's locked for a reason. And
haven't you ever been in a horror movie before?
Kind of like Poltergeist style?
Yeah, a little bit. But it maintains a steady pace. There's a little buildup at the beginning, but from the moment we first see the darkness kind of showing itself, it just maintains pace throughout. For the acting and keeping me kind of on the edge of my seat, not in the thriller sense, but just a constant sense of dread, like this movie's not letting up. This is one of those kind of movies for me with certain supernatural horror movies. When I'm sitting on the couch watching it, even with my wife right next to me, I just feel like you want to kind of tuck down low with the back of the couch completely covering your back when you're watching these. That was kind of the...
Don't touch me.
The apprehensive feeling I felt throughout. And there is, spoiler, a wonderful scene where she is trying... I knew it was going to happen. I called her from the beginning. She's trying to get up the stairs and that damn elevator breaks down halfway up the stairs. Oh my god.
Of course it would, because why wouldn't it stop working?
Oh, anyway, movie was great, and for me, I would give it an 8.5. 8.85. It was worth the drive, and I saw the previous films that it's related to. I think this is probably...
You don't have to drive that far.
No. It's one of the better ones.
To be honest, you don't have to drive that far.
Not at all. I watched that one at home, actually. But
yeah.
Anyway. So, guys, our reviews of these couple films have taken up a bulk of our episode so far tonight. I think we wanted to...
We were going to talk about TV, about American Horror Story. I've watched it, and I can just tell you this right now. Hey, Cult is weird. There you go. Go watch it if you want to. But if you don't... that's fine. It's weird. Okay.
Anyway, guys, we had a lot to... Me and Jeff kind of babbled quite a bit over the movie It. And I know not everyone saw Annabelle or its other iterations. That being said, guys, I think we're going to cut it here for the night. We've got other content for a following week's worth. So let's reconvene, shall we?
Hey, you're not a part of this.
That was just the cat. She didn't mean anything.
Come here, you little
cat. Well, guys, you can find this podcast on all your favorite podcasting sources, anywhere from iTunes to Google Play.
To your pocket.
And
we're not there unless you download us today.
There are exceptions to this rule. You guys can hit us up on our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, of course. All the links down below. Matt, shout out to you. Wish you could have been here tonight, but we're going to save our longer Halloween-themed spooky episodes for those occasions.
When will my bar mitzvah spooky, scary boys becoming men? Men becoming wolves.
Thank you for that, Mr. Barry. That was beautiful.
Do you guys know where that's from? Do I need to sing it one more time?
No.
No, I know where it was coming from. It was...
Do you? Della, nope.
Della. No.
Nope. Do I need to sing it one more time?
Sure.
Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary, men becoming, or boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves.
Tracy Morgan sings it. That's all I'm going to give you.
It's
not Saturday Night Live.
So familiar.
It's 30 Rock. But I don't want you guys to struggle too hard.
Dang it.
You wouldn't have gotten it. Joe's acting like he might have gotten it. Dang it.
It was familiar, but not enough for me to show off. Anyway.
Sign us out.
Guys, you got our social medias in your pocket. You got the podcast in your pocket, hopefully.
Yeah.
Click that download button. It helps.
Find me at the Jeff Berry, Nick at ThanatosDB87, Joe at Mr. Blue Streak,
and Lynn remaining anonymous.
Lynn at somewhere in the at Handicapable Janet.
Handicapable Janet. Good luck finding that. Well, you know what? And once again, email us. We should just
come up with a Twitter handle for Lynn every day. Or every
episode. Every we'll make episode. A different Twitter handle that they'll try to find and fail miserably. Mm-hmm. Guys, nerdentials@gmail.com.
No, I got to make one.
Yeah, well.
And then we got to sneak it in there. And then
you should surprise us. Tries everyone. Surprise everyone, including the hosts.
At paying for fun.
I'm just gonna go on there and make random Twitter accounts just for him, just have random just stuff on the background.
Give him the logins every time, so he actually ends up having like 10 Twitter handles.
All right, guys. Well, this is it. As always, nerds. We'll see you
with some pickles.
On the other side of the pickles. Jeff, it's good to have you back.
I'm here.
All right, we're going to do
so is this on the other side of the pickle?
Just blow some air through it for a minute, see what happens. Sounds like air.
I got the whole setup there.
Wait.
Timeless.
Air has a sound?
It does.
Air has a sound.
It's very timeless, actually.
Wait a second. Air has a sound?
It's like a subtle hissing between pursed lips. Do you hear it, Lynn?
I thought that was the exhale function of the lungs that made that sound.
Sometimes similar, often in conjunction with each other, but no, that was not.
Do I have a dark look?